Saturday View on Midlands 103. With thanks to Lumclean Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. Lumcleanenergy.com. Have your say. Call 0818 300 103. Text or WhatsApp your Saturday View to 083 3010 103.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday View on Midlands 103. Ronan Berry is still in his labba this morning, so I'm Sinead Hubble and I'll be here with you until 11, and I'm joined by Mary Sherwin this morning. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Sinead.
How are you doing today?
Thank you. I'm pretty good. A bit nervous, but we'll see how it goes.
You'll fly through it. So what have we coming up on today's show?
What can Leaving Cert students learn from Barbie? That's coming up. A group of women in Leash, they're setting up a women's shed. And we're going to have an update on a missing Midlands woman.
But first, we are going to talk about modular housing, because the Westmeath County Councillor has put forward a motion for rapid build accommodation in the Midlands. Fianna Fáil's Frankie Keane believes modular homes could be used to cut the council's housing list. Good morning, Frankie. Can you tell us about the motion that you brought up at the Athlone MD meeting?
Absolutely. Good morning, Sinead, and thank you for inviting me onto your programme, Sinead. Yeah, I kind of put down a motion at our recent Municipal District Athlone meeting in relation to the provision of modular housing in the Athlone area, and probably this particular motion could be replicated elsewhere throughout the country as well. First of all, I need to preface in saying that it's fantastic to see the modern new housing schemes currently being built in the Athlone and Moat areas. And in addition to this, we have a few housing schemes, big housing schemes waiting to start, who have got full planning permission. And if when all these come to fruition over the next couple of years, we'll have an excess of 1,300 new houses in the area, which is a welcome news. But the difficulty that I would see is that there's an immediate shortfall and in that regard. And my motion deals with the provision of modular homes for those people who unfortunately are getting notice to quit into their letterboxes, causing deep stress and annoyance. And the pressure is on the Westmeath County Council Housing Staff and how to address this. So my idea, my plan and my proposal, this for that word, is that for the Minister, Dara O'Brien, to allow local authorities to provide small schemes of modular houses in each local authority areas in order to kind of to take the burden off Westmeath County Council and other councils' housing team, trying to get them kind of to take that burden off from them and be a kind of a step-down service as such, step-down housing. So while it has to give a space for the council housing staff to get them houses, full-time houses or permanent houses. My query deals with, Sinead, deals with not just there's no modular house currently we provided for some nationalities and throughout the country. My query deals with people, Irish people, who are on the housing list as well. And I see no reason why Irish people should not be able to avail of these modular built houses in the short-term basis while they're waiting for permanent homes.
And Frankie, I'm just wondering, your party colleague Angus O'Rourke suggested that the use of the term modular might turn people off. Do you agree with that?
I don't really. You know, I mean, everybody has different views within the chamber. I don't really agree with my using the word modular. As I said, houses are currently being built in certain areas throughout the country as well for certain nationalities. And what I'm saying is that these particular schemes, small schemes, could be 20, 30 modular house builds, say for in that own area, they could be used as step-down housing. So they're short-term housing for people who are faced with notice to quit. I'm getting numerous contacts and representations from people who are ringing me saying, Frankie, I got a notice to quit in the door, I'm really stressed out. And my heart goes out to these people. And while the house has been built in the Athlone area and in the Moat area, which is great, there's an immediate shortfall, Sinead. I mean, and I do feel that these modular builds will give that space to the Westmeath County Council housing staff and similar to county council housing staff in other areas as well to house these people in the short-term basis while we could try and source permanent accommodation for them.
So, but Frankie, we've seen with the modular homes in Tullamore and in Rathdowney in Leash, they were due to be finished within a couple of months, but there was delays And so will it actually work out any quicker? And is it a cost-effective solution rather than building brick homes or timber-framed houses?
We need to try all options on this, Sinead. As I said, we have Westmead County Council, and just say, I'm talking about Westmead County Council at the moment. We are currently building houses. There will be kind of they're houses, what are called modern methods of construction, MMC houses, where the Department of Housing allocated €94 million to all local authorities, spread out to all local authorities there last year. And Athlone has a number of those schemes currently being built, which are good, and they're a permanent structure there, and they can be built quicker than the normal conventional block and mortar type of houses. But still, there is a time frame in building these. But modular kind of are demountable houses that will come in, that can be put up in a scheme fairly quickly. I understand fully what you're saying. There are delays in relation to some of them that are being built, and that's a shame, and that needs to be sorted out. But I'm getting queries on the doorsteps in it from people saying, how come the government are providing modular houses to people from other countries in Ireland, and they're not kind of providing them on a short-term basis to Irish people who are being faced with notice to quits and have been faced with eviction. So, and also with people who are homeless as well. So this could be a kind of a step-down solution to a problem which we're currently being faced while we're waiting for those houses, which I spoke about earlier, to be built.
Frankie Keane, thank you very much for joining us this morning and discussing your idea of a rapid build accommodation for people on the housing list and people who are getting notices to quit as well. Thanks very much for taking the call this morning, Frankie.
Thank you, Sinead, and well done on your programme. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Do you agree with Frankie? Should we be using modular houses for people who are on the waiting list or for our homeless? Because if we can do it for other people coming into the country, why are the government not looking at it? You can get in touch this morning on the Lambrother Toyota Tullamore text line, which is 083 3010 103, or you can also WhatsApp that number. And you can also give Nelly a call, who's waiting eagerly by the phone this morning on 0818 300 103. Still to come this morning, we're going to be discussing the merits of bringing Barbie into the classroom.
Saturday View on Midlands 183 with thanks to Lumclune Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. LumclunEnergy.com.
Welcome back to Saturday View. Another issue that came up this week is that there are currently 800 empty beds designated for refugees in the Midlands. The site in Stradbally was first mentioned as accommodation by the Department of Integration in October of last year. So this new site is located close to where 500 refugees stayed up to 6 weeks in tents after Electric Picnic. There are only 30 beds being used at the facility at this time. Member of the Laois Integration Network and independent Laois candidate in the upcoming elections, Pauline Flanagan, has been speaking with David Hollywood. And she says that local communities have seen halls and hotels taken over while these beds still lie empty.
Isn't it absolutely shocking? I could not believe when I found out. And I really had to double check my sources to make sure before I issued a press release about this. To think that now there are over 800 empty beds when we have so many. I believe the figure of not just refugees, but Irish people homeless, sleeping on the street homeless, is going to exceed 1,000. And I just find that just so frustrating, shocking and horrified to think that that's happening when you've got empty beds there.
The beds themselves, the accommodation, you've seen it before. Describe it to us.
That's right, yeah. I went over, I think it was in December last year. And I mean, I had been involved as a member of the local Laois community, but also as a member of Laois Integration Network when the Ukrainian refugees arrived to the tents in Stradbally. And obviously the whole community reached out and made sure to make everybody feel welcome when you could think of the storms and everything. And no matter how glamorous a tent is a tent. So we were keen to see then what exactly the new site was like. And it's at a different location, but still on the grounds of the Cosby Estate. And to be honest, David, I was blown away. It's just so comfortable. Just every single room has got, now there are cabins obviously inside in a marquee. It's not nothing glamorous about it, but they're so safe, so perfect, so warm. Every one of them have an ensuite. Then you've got separate tented areas for people to be able to hang out, so to speak, and just be able to commune as a community, given the trauma that they're coming from. So I was really happy to hear about them. And now I find out that there's only 30 of them full, and 800 of them still empty. I really do feel that what's happening at the moment is that the government, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. Because this is unforgivable. And I'm thinking of, for example, we had the racket hall in Rosspray, a whole community that can't now go for something after a funeral or go for after an event. Or communions, confirmations, the very same in the D Hotel in Florida. And you know, the one thing that's driving all of this, to be honest, is money. There's people who are getting very, very rich overnight as a result of what's happening. And meanwhile, we've got empty beds that could house those refugees.
Okay, there's two dynamics that you suggested are at play here in terms of the empty bed situation in Stradbally, and then the pressure that is under the tourism sector and local hotels throughout Ireland and, as you said, the Midlands. And that is that the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. So we're talking about an administrative confusion. But you've also alluded to the fact that people stand to benefit financially from leaning predominantly maybe on the tourism or the hotel sector in Ireland. Who is it, do you think, is benefiting financially from maintaining the status quo?
I'll totally concur with that, with what I said, because it's literally investors. It's not even hoteliers, to be honest. My understanding, for example, with the D Hotel in Drogheda, is that that was purchased by investors sometime before the agreement happened with the Department of Integration. This has been an issue for so long. This has been an issue as well with direct provision centres, for example. So, we've got people who have become multi-millionaires. They're not in it for the love of the refugees. They're not in it for the love of their communities. They're in it to make money. And that's what's wrong with our society now. I'm galled. I'm so angry with the way the government is signing contracts with these people when there's other solutions that are clearly available.
Pauline, you're running in the forthcoming local elections as an independent candidate. Let's project forward and imagine that this situation occurred whilst you were a public representative at local level. Is there anything that you in the future or the current councillors can do about a situation like this?
Yeah, you know, and I believe, and I get tired of when I hear councillors calling on a meeting with the minister. Like, that's an obvious one. Of course you're going to do that. But to me, that's not enough. There's too much reactive work going on, to my knowledge, with public representatives. I mean, I just see, for example, with the communities I'm involved in, which really do make a difference. Let's say, for example, Leash Integration Network. Like, what we would do is we would actually not just make sure everyone feels welcome in our society, but if there's a solution, we would offer that solution to the government as well, because clearly I have no faith in what they're doing. So therefore, I would have to be more proactive in suggesting and proffering solutions to the government.
Okay, and then specific to the issue in Stradbally, where we've got 800 unused beds that were delivered to house refugees, where do we think the ball has dropped on the floor here? Is it through the Department of Integration? Is it through local delivery? Where's the solution that lies behind there?
I honestly don't know, but my gut is the Department of Integration. And look, at, you know, I guess that they must be out the door so busy. But really, I do think the ball has dropped here. I imagine it's something to do with the fact with the new legislation coming in relation to new refugees from Ukraine. But, that, you know, at a swipe of a pen, Minister Roderick O'Gorman could change that policy and just go, OK, look, we have 800 beds there. Let's get those IPAS refugees down there so that we can continue and make sure they're safe and not sleeping on the streets.
That was member of the Leash Integration Network and independent Leash candidate in the upcoming elections, Pauline Flanagan.
John has been in touch on WhatsApp on 083 3010 103, and he says, you can tell it's election time. Why didn't Frankie propose modular housing before now? Are they worried because they have to knock on the doors of people's houses and confront them now? If you have anything else you want to say this morning, Nelly is on the phone on 0818 300 103. Now it's time to cast our minds back many, many, many years ago for some of us, of the Leaving Cert.
Less of the many.
How long ago was it, Mary?
Less of the many, please. Thank you very much.
Many, many years ago for me, as it is. But what did you study in English for the Leaving Cert?
I can just about remember. Macbeth, actually. And it is still one of my favourite Shakespeare plays. I can still remember some lines from it, believe it or not.
Give us a few.
Macbeth said, "Is this a dagger that I see before me? Come, let me clutch thee." I always remembered that for some reason. What about you? What did you do?
I did King Lear. And again, some of the lines stuck in my head. Cordelia says to her father, "I love you, Majesty, according to my bond, no more, no less."
Oh, OK, that's a good one.
But I also did film, and it was My Left Foot.
Really?
Which is incredible film to study, to watch, to dissect. But I did find at the end of it, I was like, I don't know if I ever need to watch that again. And I don't think I have watched it
really?
After all these years.
OK. I suppose when you do, looking at a film for pure enjoyment is one thing. When you then have to get down into the minutiae of it and discuss every single scene and the setting and everything else, then it takes the fun out of it.
Mm. Well, students are going to have plenty of fun now because Barbie is going to be on the curriculum.
It is indeed.
I thought there was a lot of storylines and that it was, on the surface, didn't look that deep. But if you look at it, it did really tell us that men and women need each other to create balance. Is that what you found from it? As the psychologist, Mary.
Yeah, balance. I think it was really interesting for me. The power dynamic in it was really interesting. I thought the Ken and Barbie, that Ken felt that he couldn't exist without Barbie. And it was more a male dependency than a female dependency. It was kind of a mirror image maybe of society that a lot of women feel that we're sometimes dependent on men for different things. Whereas in the movie, in the beginning at least, it was completely flipped.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people are going to scoff at this anyway.
So we're going to discuss this further with Paddy Travers, who's an English teacher in Portlaoise College. Good morning, Paddy.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
No problem at all.
So, Barbie on the curriculum. As an English teacher, how do you feel about that?
Well, I suppose if nothing else, it's created a bit of a stir and a bit of conversation. I don't think I ever recall another time when people were ever interested about what was on the Leaving Cert curriculum. So I suppose if nothing else, it's created conversation about English and English in schools. But I suppose, yeah, as a Barbie itself, yeah, it's certainly a conversation starter. Particularly people who haven't seen film, automatically assume once they hear the word Barbie, that's childish in nature and it shouldn't be on the course at all. But when you actually look at the themes and what's involved in it, and I think the only other thing is the commercialism and the looking at capitalism and product placement, because like essentially that's the whole film is product placement too about Barbie, which I was kind of surprised that Mattel themselves, you know, who are selling the Barbie dolls, that there is a little bit of a dark tinge to the film that they allowed that. But yeah, these are all, I suppose, sort of just little nuances to it.
And it's not this year or next year, isn't it? 2026 that it's coming in.
Yeah, it'll be on the curriculum for 2026. So the students who would start fifth year next year, it would be an option for them to do for 2026.
How did you feel when you heard it, that it was coming?
Well, I suppose it was a bit of a surprise. Firstly, given how recent it is, generally speaking, in the English curriculum, it's been a little bit slow to introduce new texts. But I suppose over the last couple of years, they've had a few books, novels such as Where the Crawdads Sing, you know, that has been relatively new, and they're starting to add them into the curriculum, I suppose. from the NCCA's perspective, they're looking to keep it relevant and keep it up to date with what, you know, young people are reading and watching, and having something that interests them on the curriculum.
And for listeners who don't understand how the Leaving Cert might have changed since they did it, you might explain a little bit about it, because I understand it is part of the comparative studies.
Yeah, so generally it'll be on paper two of the Leaving Cert. So students will then be given the opportunity. They will do their single text, which for most students tends to be their Shakespearean text at higher level. And then they'll pick three to compare. So at higher level, they would generally compare a film, a novel, and a play. So they'll be looking at unravelling a strand or commonality between comparing and contrasting. Say, when we're talking about Barbie, so perhaps they're looking at feminism or masculinity, something like that, a theme. And then the other options would be, you could be looking at the cultural context of it, or the genre itself.
With regards the cultural context there, I mean, obviously, it's something, the role of men and women is definitely something that could be explored there. How would you, as an English teacher, tease that out with your students?
Yeah, so I suppose you're definitely looking at how these things have evolved and changed over time. So I suppose, like, when the students were looking for, because I know the Shakespearean text on for that year, it's going to be Macbeth. So when they're looking back and they're saying that the final line that Lady Macbeth offers at the end of that is "Unsex me now," and we're looking at, you know, the role that gender plays, and the role that that it plays in the perception of people, in power, and how power is divided amongst people in society. I'm also a politics teacher, so it's one of those things, I suppose, that it's really got into the conversation of students over the last couple of years, and they're really starting to look at going, well, how are these things in this film? So we've got Barbie Land, and then he goes into Ken creates his own little kingdom. And how do the characters in these plays or in these films, such as Barbie, how is that shown? How is it? What sort of way is it presented to us? And then looking at saying, well, how does that apply to our own lives? And how can we relate or not relate to those characters?
And it was interesting you mentioned Lady Macbeth, because that was something I studied in my Leaving Cert, and Unsex Me Now, it seems that it's kind of the flippant, complete juxtaposition there with Barbie, that it's the whole idea of that she is becoming a woman and she goes to the gynecologist at the very end. What would you make of that?
Yeah, so like for Lady Macbeth, really, we're looking at her and... because that was actually the question that was on the Leaving Cert last year on Lady Macbeth, was looking at the gender role and looking at how she divests herself of her femininity in order to gain power, and the lust and thirst for power, and her own husband, I suppose, in that. And when we're looking at masculinity and femininity, and we're looking at Macbeth himself, and he's really, once he's used his wife in terms of getting power, he doesn't actually notice that she's going slightly insane and is off on his own power trip. So we're looking at the relationships too, and how men and women relate in society, and particularly at Lady Macbeth and Barbie, we're looking at that gender and that power, and because we know, we discuss it in politics too, about the gender pay gap, roles and expectations. You know, what comes up particularly with COVID-19, and when COVID was here, and we had parents, and we're looking at homeschooling and primary school children in particular, and the studies and the evidence shows that it was the majority of women who did those caring roles, and what are our expectations of people?
And I think it's really interesting with Barbie, she has the power in the beginning, and then that flips to Ken, and he's the one who becomes powerful. And coming back to that whole notion of relationships, it's when the women, the Barbies in the film, start to work together and play men to their weaknesses, I suppose, that they manage to get their power back. What do you think of that?
Yeah, like, and power roles and roles that we perceive of people, like, it's a really interesting thing for the students to start teasing out. Like, I suppose that's the one bonus point, I suppose, and also criticism in relation to Barbie itself, in that, like, a lot of the ideas and themes are generally speaking, we would have seen with the Leave Insert films that they're a lot more nuanced and you had to really dig down and think a lot about them. But the one thing about Barbie is it's in your face and you can't but notice the teams. And that really, when we get Barbie and she comes back, and then even Ken, he starts thinking about, you know, his role in things when he has to go into Barbie's reality and start thinking about his own masculinity and what it is for him. And I suppose that we look at Ken in terms of modern masculinity, and he feels disempowered then. Like, I suppose that's one of the things that we look at is, you know, for males too, like this misguided notion of people who, men who feel disempowered, and then they're seeking solace in that patriarchy, in that structure that has given them the power. So, yeah, it's very interesting to tease that out.
Part of the purpose of the comparative piece is to develop critical thinking skills. Do you think that Barbie, the movie, will be useful in developing those critical thinking skills in our young people?
Yeah, but I suppose it does have a role. Now, if it was down to me, and this is just my personal opinion, and if I was choosing, I would have had Barbie as a film that would be studied at junior cert, more than Leaving Cert. I suppose, generally speaking, the texts and films that have been on have been a little bit more complex. And that's not to say that Barbie's not without its merits and will bring up forth discussion, but the comparative itself is a skill that students have to develop over their 2 years in school, because, you know, they're quite used to discussing and looking at one particular text and taking that on its merits. But it's thinking across different genres and different time periods and comparing and contrasting that. It's a master of a skill that, you know, it takes students a while to get a handle on and start thinking about, because really what they do when they're looking at film is they look at key scenes and the language of film, you know, how the colour is presented, how costume is presented, how does Greta Gerwig, how does she use space, and all of those things are wonderful in the film. You know, the one sort of criticism of the Leaving Cert English, and particularly the poetry, is that it's a lot of doom and gloom and a lot of negativity, and that's not one thing that, you know, the colour and fun that's involved in Barbie, at least it's, if nothing else, it's a nice contrast to some of the other texts that are on it.
And that's a really interesting point, because it is such a bright film with the colour, with the pink. I mean, you can't escape pink in the film.
It does, yeah.
But at the same time, there is a kind of an edge and darkness to it, a kind of an underbelly, so to speak, I felt when I watched it. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, and I suppose that is, you know, we would discuss those sort of things with students too, even when we look at relationships in school and looking at students and how they relate to each other. And we would have always said, you know, the person who's always smiling and bright and funny doesn't necessarily always translate to being happy. So the use of colour and the use of brightness, etc. But the themes and what they're looking at, it's like, smiling underneath the veneer of that, there's dark and troubled waters that they can think about as well.
And I think that's a lovely way of putting it. Smiling, you know, that's the veneer, and underneath that there is the darkness and there is the trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. So listen, Paddy, thank you so much for joining us here this morning. Really appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
No problem whatsoever. Thank you.
Interesting message in from Moll on the text line 083 30 10 103. She suggests comparing Romeo and Juliet with Ken and Barbie. Would that work, Mary, as a former teacher?
As a former teacher, I'm kind of thinking, like, Romeo and Juliet is a true, well, love story where it's tragic, obviously. They end up dying at the end. Nobody ends up dying in Barbie. Love story, I think it's about loving yourself. Like, Barbie in the movie begins to love herself and accept herself and for who she is. And she never really loved Ken, did she?
No. Poor Ken. He'd wave to her every day and she'd just continue on in her world.
Yep. She was just completely oblivious. And it wasn't that she was oblivious to him. You know, she knew he existed.
Yeah.
But he was so dependent on her. She was the sun in his universe, whereas he was inconsequential to her. But yeah, so the comparison.
Oh, we've all been there at some point in our lives, Mary.
Oh God, unrequited love constantly. Absolutely. So many times in college when you fancied someone and they did not fancy you back. So I can totally empathise with Ken.
Poor Al Ken. Well, let us know what you think about Barbie appearing on the Leave Insert. Is it too fluffy? Is it too lighthearted? Or is there a lot that we can learn from it? Let us know this morning. Nellie is standing by the phone on 0818 300 103. Next, we're going to discuss making friendships later in life.
Saturday View on Midlands 183. With thanks to Lumclune Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. LumclunEnergy.com.
And we're already into the final part of this morning's Saturday View. I'm Sinead Hubble and Mary Sherwin is joining me in studio as well this morning. We did get a message in to ask drivers to please indicate on roundabouts. Apparently, a lot of drivers this morning are not signalling when they're taking the third exit on a roundabout. So if anyone's listening, make sure you indicate this morning.
That is such a pet peeve of mine. And I think people genuinely do not know how to indicate on a roundabout. I think that's the problem. Anyway, people will let us know what they think. Back to business. A meeting is to take place next month just before International Women's Day to form a new women's shed in the Midlands. And I think that's a really interesting idea because I was a little bit older, not from Tullamore, and trying to make friends and, you know, make friendship connections when you're older and even now at my age is really difficult.
It really is. I moved to Tullamore when I was 21. I didn't know anybody down here. Obviously, I only had people in the station. I ended up moving in and sharing a house with people who worked here. So I wasn't mingling with anyone else. And I'm not a sporty person. So there wasn't really anything. We did join indoor soccer for a while, but I was atrocious. So they wouldn't even pick me for a team because I was terrible. And that, fair enough. But it was very difficult to meet people and make friends. Yeah. And it took a long time to establish friendships down here. And now I have some of the best people in the world here. But it does take time. And it's very hard if you're not working in an organisation with a lot of people your age.
Yeah.
Or if you're not a parent, that you might be meeting parents at the other group. And even at that, it's very difficult to just strike up that conversation.
It is about making the first step and making the first move. And just those examples that you mentioned, meeting parents at the school gate, my kids were younger, and that's how I've a couple of really good friends in my life from that. I joined drama, obviously. People know me for that in town. And that has been great. I made some fantastic friendships. I'd probably be in goals if I joined the soccer because I wasn't any good. Used to play basketball at school, but again, I wouldn't trust myself to kind of be good enough to take part in a team. But there is that whole piece of making the first move. So what I've tried to do sometimes is if I'm waiting for a coffee and if there's somebody there, kind of go about the weather, you know, something about, oh, what's happened, or God, it's an awful day. That's always a safe one. And just start up that conversation. You never know where it might lead.
And you're great at just randomly chatting to people, whereas I'll always wait for somebody to make the first move. But there's a group of women in Port Leash who are taking things into their own hands and are planning to set up a women's shed.
Absolutely. And Barbara Sheridan is one of those women who's leading the cause behind Women's Shed Port Leash. Good morning, Barbara. Can you tell us how it came about?
Well, just listening to you there, girls, talking about making friends in older life, you could be talking about me. I retired last September and was just looking for something to do and a way of making new friends, meeting new people. I've lived in Port Leash for the last 18 years and had plenty of colleagues and, you know, work colleagues and acquaintances and friends in that area. But I wouldn't have known an awful lot of people outside. So I went looking for a women's shed, but there was none. So I came across Anne-Marie Allen and Thomasina Connell, and we decided to give it a go. So we've been working away in the background setting it up. And we're having an open meeting for all women in the parish centre in Port Leash on Thursday, the 7th of March at 7 p.m, which is appropriately the eve of International Women's Day.
And Barbara, as you said there, like making friendships is difficult because you have to find that connection with people, and it can be hard just drumming up that courage to sit down. And many women also, when we talk about International Women's Day, we always talk about, you know, women put everyone else first. So making friends may not be a priority for many women when they're a mum or they're working. And like yourself, find yourself when you get to retirement that your circle has definitely reduced.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd be an outgoing person, and no more than yourself, I'd be, you know, comfortable talking to people in, you know, coffee shops or whatever, about the weather or whatever. But it's difficult to take it to the next level. And I think the whole Women's Shed movement is brilliant from that point of view, because it does provide a safe, welcoming place for women of all ages. And not just those who are retired, but maybe stay-at-home mums or people who are carers, or, you know, women who can come together, make new friends, learn new skills, you know, connect, support each other, I suppose.
And Barbara, can I ask, if I came to one of the meetings that you have, like, what would I expect? What do you do there?
Well, we're in the early stages of getting up and running, you know. I mean, the programme of activities will be driven by the members, what they want. Some people would like, you know, maybe arts and crafts. I know there's already a great arts crafts group in Portlaoise, and we've been hoping to harness some of their skills to get involved, you know, encourage them to get involved. Some people might just want to get out of the house, come along and have a cup of coffee. Some might want to go for a walk. Some might want, you know, talks on women's health. It really, the possibilities are endless, I would say. But I suppose the most important thing is to get women along and get involved at whatever level they want to get involved.
Because men's sheds have been hugely successful over the years, and it was one of like a groundbreaking initiative to get men out of their comfort zone, get men out of their own shed at home and go and make friends. And I remember speaking to one group a few years ago, and they said the most important piece of equipment that they had in their shed was their kettle, because they would put it on, open a packet of biscuits and have a chat.
Absolutely. And I think that's the same with many of the shed organisations, whether from women or men. I know I visited the one in Tullamore, and the kitchen, even though they have a fantastic premises there with lots of space in that, everybody congregates in the kitchen. And that's quite typical, you know, and I think that's the heart of the shed.
I'm just laughing at the congregating in the kitchen. Is that because that's what we do? And I wanted to know, were there any fights over the biscuits?
I don't know whether there's any fights over the biscuits or not, but hopefully we'll have lots of positive things coming out of the kitchen.
Have you a space already earmarked for the shed where you want to locate it?
Well, we haven't got a permanent space, but I believe Thomasina Connell has been in touch with the fantastic new library here in Portlaoise, and they're offering us their community room on a temporary basis, which will be fantastic.
So, Barbara, when is your next meeting taking place?
Our meeting is taking place on Thursday, the 7th of March at 7 o'clock in the Parish Centre in Portlaoise, and we'd encourage women of all ages over 18 to come along and join us, and we will have the kettle on and there will be a cup of tea.
That's brilliant, Barbara. Well, best of luck with the initiative, and hopefully you'll get plenty of women signing up.
Thank you very much indeed, girls.
It's a great idea, and it's not actually the only women's shed that's popping up in Portlaoise. Portlaoise's Women's Shed was set up a couple of weeks ago. They held their first meeting there on the 14th of February, and they say they already have 40 members signed up to it. They're going to hold their next meeting on February 29th in Laois Partnership on the Timahoe Road at 6 o'clock, and they're asking all the ladies who want to join to come along, and it's for women of all walks of life, all ages and ability. So that's Portlaoise Women's Shed. We just spoke to Barbara Sheridan from Women's Shed Portlaoise. So fantastic opportunity for women in Portlaoise with two groups on the go.
I think it's great because men's, as you said, the men's sheds have been operating for a while. I think it's great that women are now recognising that we need to kind of get together you know, outside of the home. You know, a lot of times people might call in and have the cup of tea with you in your own house, but just even to get out. And I do know that here in Tullamore, there's a group of women that meet in the town square and they walk either down by the canal or around town. And I don't know, is it 6 or 6:30 or 7, what nights it is, but I was just told about that recently as well. And it's more of a social thing, you know, just to get out and to meet people and to walk.
And I know at home in Oldcastle, the Gaelic Mothers and Others was set up, and it was set up for football. They meet once a week. But out of that, other things have grown. So they now have basketball on a Monday night. And I've gone along a few times and I've met women who I've never seen before in my life. And you just have great fun. It's an excuse to get out of the house, a bit of exercise for those of us that don't do enough of it. And out of that, then they organise nights out, or even the WhatsApp group. It's so supportive. And that's one of the key things that, you know, sometimes if you're doing something or you've put yourself forward, it can be really difficult. But there's always messages of support going in, or even just even wishing somebody happy birthday can make a huge difference to somebody.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it is like Facebook groups and all of those kind of WhatsApp groups. They're fantastic. And so long as they're used appropriately, sometimes they can be used inappropriately. I'm in one currently, and sometimes some of the stuff that comes in, you're kind of thinking, should that really be in there? But it is fantastic. And just even what I tend to do, I don't know what our listeners are like, but if there's general comments coming in, sometimes I will just go to the person and contact them directly rather than put it into the group, because I don't like kind of putting things into the group. I prefer to text Sinead Hubble on her own and say, listen, well done, that was fantastic, or whatever. You know, I just, yeah.
And that can be it as well, because it can be a confidence thing sometimes about something that you're going to put into, especially if there's 30 or 40 people in the group. You don't want to come across as aggressive or passive or whatever. So you can overthink things, Mary. We can overthink things.
No, really? Do you think?
Mary, thank you very much for joining me this morning on Saturday Review. We're almost out of time, but Ina just sent in a message to say a pet peeve of hers is people not indicating on roundabouts. So I think we'll leave it there this morning. Thank you very much for joining us. Ronan Berry will be back next Saturday from 10 a.m. Goodbye.